computer not working right? Benjamin Rockwell can make sense of it for you. Keeping your technology running smoothly, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
Of course, we've got a number of different things in store for you here on this week's Computer Talk Radio. Steve Kasky is going to talk about tech innovations for the blind. Dr. Doreen Galley, she went to an expo called Put Data First. Marty's going to talk to us. He's going to give us a deeper discussion into projectors. And Keith Emcedor and I are going to talk about the latest news of 11 Labs AI-generated voices that are coming. Talking Matthew McConaughey and Michael Caine, saying whatever it is you'd like them to say. We've got a bunch of listener questions. Julie asks, what is the most underrated trick for improvement of daily computing? Glenn, his wife clicked a fake giveaway link, and he wants to know how to respond to that. Steve asks, why do some websites show unsecure? And then I'm going to talk about laid off workers and how they're not alone, and I've got some guidance for that, and also some hints on general ergonomics across your workspace. All of that is available on this week's Computer Talk Radio, and if you missed any of that, you can always check out the podcast at computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. You can also scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. Of course, if you'd like to talk to me in person, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Let's dive into the news from the last week, and I am not sure what to make of Microsoft with their approach to Windows 11. The latest build of the semi-annual Windows 11 update has been released to what they call the Canary Insiders Channel, version 26H1. And there's a problem here. It's not for any of us. Well, not for most of us. Only for people who are running specific silicon, which is a buzzword for special high-end next-generation chips that most of the public doesn't use. The next major release for those of us who haven't got this high-end chip is officially slated as 26H2, which isn't going to be coming until the second half of next year. And there are many questions in my head, but first and foremost is what's coming next in the chip world. This also means that the latest significant feature update that we had was 24H2, so it's going to be 2 years between meaningful feature updates. Sure, 25H2 had some bug fixes and performance overhauls, but is the Microsoft imagination team failing us? And we get even deeper into this in that Microsoft's current Windows lead, this is the guy over all of Windows production, he's been pushing the idea via tweets that Windows is going to evolve into an agentic OS. I want you to think about this. The operating system is going to have agentic AI built into it. This posting resulted in a majority of comments, presumably customers, all dismissing this idea. This echoes a similar complaint that many have had about Copilot, as well as the competitor, Apple, with their own Apple Intelligence. Now, don't get me wrong. AI is going to need to become a part of our lives, but this really needs to be more of an organic delivery, full of optional approaches, not a foisting of someone else's idea of what we need and must have and should all work with. See, there's a fine line between offering something and then the other option of being left with no options. And both companies, covering nearly 95% of the non-mobile operating systems, are pushing forward with a zeal that is disturbing as users are ignored and find little to no excitement in the onslaught of AI everything everywhere, focusing heavily on this approach to the exclusion of other features that we could really use could actually slow down the current pace of excitement in technology overall. And that's concerning for me. The New York Times, in defense of their paywall, sued OpenAI. It comes down to how people might have used ChatGPT to find out news that was blocked to the non-paying readers of New York Times. OpenAI was delivered an order to reveal the entire and complete chats of 20 million users as part of that. And they're fighting back. They're stating that 99.9% of the chat exchanges have zero relevance to this case. The New York Times is responding that the information is de-identified, so this shouldn't be a concern to individuals. I'm inclined to think that this should raise concerns for you, for me, for everyone, where your questions and concerns to ChatGPT could be scoured for deeper reasons and all kinds of other information there. George Orwell's 1984 raised the concern of entities being able to go and monitor your personal writings, your diaries, and go through all of your information. In this case, seems like a small but subtle step towards that dystopian future predicted so very long ago. If this is allowed to go forward, what's going to be next? An erosion of privacy now in the event of protecting profits could lead to a later erosion of privacy in the event of safety to the children, and then in the event of terrorism, and then in the event of undesirable speech, and then what next? It's all a slippery slope, and this really concerns me, and I really hope the courts get this right. And the number one song on Billboard's country digital song sales chart for the second week in a row was Walk My Walk by Breaking Rust. Okay, this is not a music show. This is not something I would normally cover. This is a tech show. But unfortunately, this number one song is AI generated completely. People are paying money for AI to talk about how hard its life is, AI's life, how we all have it tough, and we need to, okay, just, what? I don't understand this. This rabbit hole is getting deeper, and it's not where we should be. I want everybody to use AI. I want them to understand the power that it has to make life easier for us, the ability for us to gain all kinds of different information, to process large quantities of information with simple instructions. But when you and I start looking to AI for other things, like deeper meaning in our lives, to represent us in government, like Albania has done. That's one I almost covered here. And to do things like help us through our problems, AI, the robot, the computer. If we're relying on it for all of this, then I think we're going in the wrong direction. Bank of America has a lawsuit that's been thrown against us, against them, sorry. And it's something that we can identify with. You get to work, you boot your computer, and it jumps through various hoops like signing in, installing patch files, loading applications, and all of that. Well, B of A decided that you didn't start, well, the workers didn't start work until they loaded a program to clock in for the start of the day. And they also had to go through a number of tasks for shutting their computer down at the end of the day after they had already clocked out. The problem is that the U.S. Department of Labor has made a requirement that computer startup tasks are due compensation. And this is part of the workers' first principle activities of the day. There are reports of problems with technical systems, issues with lunch breaks, and other stall points that might mean somebody could be sitting around for long periods of time when they're actually available and on site to work. The lawsuit could impact a large group of workers, but it all depends on if they could perform other work when they actually started getting paid and so forth. Perhaps the most telling item of the week, however, about where we have gone and where we're going is in the form of a movie trailer? Yeah, Disney's Toy Story series has been about the travel from innocence into various progressive later stages in life, but never has it been with something so abrupt and concerning as the idea of introducing technology to a young child. The two-minute teaser trailer is mostly revolving around the horror of a new package that serves to threaten the imaginary world of toys that come to life when nobody can see. In this case, that package includes a digital tablet. Think Android tablet or iPad, which is something that far too many youth are embracing. And abandoning the paths that build healthy minds through imagination and exploration. I don't know if I should consider this deeply funny and self-aware or profoundly sad. Coming up next, Julie asks me what's the most underrated trick for improvement of daily computing. That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right. So it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
Julie's question. What is your most underrated, yet best trick for daily computer usage? And this one is something that is, I just love doing this. And I'll tell you about that in here in a moment. The website, of course, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. Now, this is something that really applies only to people who have external keyboards. And I'm also going to say it's not going to work with the chiclet style keyboards. This is going to be anything where you have some distance, some regular keyboard stuff. Don't do this. Don't bother with this on something that is a $7 keyboard or anything like that. I'm talking about the keyboards that are $30 and up. Typically, your mechanical keyboards, all of your really good ones. And that's what I've got around here. I have a lot of these. I use a number of them on a very regular basis, and I enjoy them. Each of them has their own little quirks, and part of this comes from I am a heavy keyboard user. I do a lot of typing, and I enjoy the feel of a good keyboard. Here's the thing. Over the course of 6 months to a year, little bits and pieces of fingernail or hair or food bits, if you eat near your keyboard and stuff like that, will get in there and the keys will get a little sticky. Now, when you're typically typing along at a fast pace and you don't feel this, you don't necessarily need to do this. But if you notice, yeah, this key over here frequently sticks and so forth, then you should start thinking about cleaning the keyboard. And it's really more of the key caps is where a lot of this focus is. But when you go through this process, you get to really take care of this. Now, it does take about 20 to 30 minutes, depending on how fast you are at it. I've gotten it down to, I can do the entire process in just over 10 minutes. But it is a very mechanical process. It's very tactile, and I enjoy doing this a lot. And about every 6 months for me. And what I do, the first up, is I unplug the keyboard. And I take the keyboard and I will go through. And you can get a keycap removal tool. And frequently these will come with keycap sets. And this is a great upgrade, by the way. If you want to upgrade your keycaps, you can check your keyboard and find out if there are keycaps available for you for that keyboard to replace them. And when I say to replace them, you can add all kinds of different style and coloring and just amazing stuff that you can do with these keyboards, especially if they're underlit. You can get some of these keys that will actually provide more light through the keys and stuff like that. So you're going to use this keyboard or keycap removal tool. And the one I have in my hands right now, I brought it over just to it was just in my my mug over off to the side where I keep my pens. Basically, it has what it amounts to a couple of wires that are formed in kind of this U shape, and then the holder up top, and they're plugged into that. And you separate them and you just plunge them down over the top of the key, and you then they'll snap in underneath. And it's hard to describe. Once you use this once, you get the idea very quickly. And you they'll snap in underneath, and they will allow you to lift that keycap out. From there, I go through and I will take all of those keycaps out. I do everything at once if I have just one key sticking, just because if I do just one at a time, another one will pop up and then another one. You can use this for just one, not a problem, but I usually do the whole set, or sometimes I'll skip the number pad and I pop all of them off. And I go, and you can do this in a number of different ways, but you need to dump all of these into water and dish soap. And you can use hand soap, and a nice soft hand soap works as well. And what you're doing is you're going to wash those keys. And I will go through and I'll dump them into like a bathroom sink with the plunger stopped down and all of that. And some of this soap in there, and I'll just run them through, and I will just roll through left, right, forwards, backwards, and just kind of get them all very wet with this soap. It'll take off all of the grime, all of the different hand oil and stuff like that. And it really cleans them up nicely. Now I let them sit there for a short little while before I go through and I do that process again. While it's sitting there, I will take some canned air or a blower, and I will blow out all of the dust that is underneath those keycaps. I will clean that out thoroughly. And yes, I will use like Q-tips and little alcohol wipes and stuff like that to kind of clean up any kind of small spill that might have gotten inside. And then I go through and I put all of those keycaps back through that whole process again of just washing them back and forth. And then I will go ahead and run nice warm water over the top of those again, just to rinse away any of the soap residue and stuff like that. And then I go through and I will just shake them dry. I'll usually grab like an old rag, and after that, I'll put them on top of that old rag and fold the rag over into a nice little bowl, if you will, and then just shake them around, just trying to dry them off. And then I put them all back. And I will tell you, it is so underrated. If you have no idea the amount of dirt and gunk that gets into the keys, the keycaps, and into the keyboard area over the course of, a couple of years. So cleaning that really restores the keyboard to a brand new just feel to it. And I just love doing that. I will tell you, if you are not familiar with doing this, taking a before and after picture really helps. The first up, the before, gives you a reference point to remember, it's the print key, then the scroll key, then the break key from left to right, or whatever it is. It'll help you remember where all of the keys go. I know this by heart. I've been doing this for so long that it's just instinctive. I don't even need the pictures anymore. But This is just a great thing to do. You will find that the keys will work a lot better. They will sink in. They'll be a lot more comfortable just by doing this cleaning process. There are other different items just for improving your daily computing experience. I'll tell you, I reboot my computers, all of them, go through the entire restart process, or rather shut down and restart kind of thing. I do that at least once per week. I also go through and I'll clean my screens. Now, you don't need to use like a window cleaner or anything like that. That can destroy, not really destroy, but kind of mess up some of the keys. A good microfiber cloth with just some nice clean water. We're talking, you know, if you have to use distilled water, but bottled water. This isn't something, you know, like if you have hard tap water, you're not going to want to use the hard tap water on your screen. That's just not going to really do a whole lot of good there. And you just slowly, it should be damp, not soaking wet, just damp enough so that it will take off any dirt, any oil that might have gotten on there because you bumped your screen with your hand or something like that. The other really big trick I have is an ergonomics trick, and that is I look away for 2 minutes every 20 minutes, and it's just a matter of looking outside the window, going, just walking through the home, and it's just kind of resetting your eyes every once in a while to make sure that your eyes aren't focused on the screen quite so much. These are all underrated, but really they will improve your entire experience. I love doing all of these. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373, 888. I'll answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be, but if I don't answer the phone, that's okay. Leave a message. You can call me anytime, and I will get back to you with answers to those questions, of course.
You can call him anytime for a nickel or a dime. If he doesn't pick up, then you can just hang up. How are you, Benjamin?
That's the voice of Keith M. Cedar, who's definitely gone weird.
Like that's a new thing.
Yeah, has always been. So what are we talking about this week? Usually you talk about Mac stuff, but this has been kind of a slow week
well,
in that
is
world.
Kind of cross-platform, Benjamin.
Okay.
And I will tell you that the actors that are in play in this particular case, Matthew McConaughey and Michael Caine, are very distinguishable and recognizable just for their voice acting talent.
Yes.
But the funny thing is, and I believe James Earl Jones has already previously been contracted for the voice of Darth Vader, but I'm surprised we haven't heard that Morgan Freeman wasn't contracted for this, because what we're talking about is these actors that we've previously mentioned have been selected to have their voices reproduced for AI.
Okay, so Matthew McConaughey isn't that much of a stretch because...
All right, all right, all right.
Well, okay.
I could be the AI.
Yeah. Well, one of the things about him, though, is he has invested in a company called 11 Labs, which does...
Did the first 10 fail?
Yeah, apparently, which does a lot of this AI voicing. So if I wanted to, now, mind you, I wouldn't. I have zero plans on doing this. If I wanted to, I could go and pay for them to sample my voice, and I could do all kinds of stuff here with the radio show without my ever opening my mouth. But
and let's talk about that. But it's
not going to have that live sound. It's kind of like you go and you watch YouTube videos, and you're 30 seconds in, and it is talking about how wonderful this particular product is, and you go, this isn't even a live person. And you just realize, I can't stand this. And you move on to the next video. You've seen these videos, right, Keith?
I have, Benjamin. And I often think, wouldn't it be interesting to have some of these tools when we're recording? And I'm thinking, but where's the nuance? Where's the spark? Where's the, you know, sometimes you're having a conversation.
Authenticity.
Sometimes you and I are having a conversation.
Yes.
And something you say will trigger a memory or a thought. And then you're not going to get that from an AI.
No. Although there are some platforms out there that introduce that kind of banter back and forth. And
don't get me wrong.
Yeah, but it does get creepy.
I don't shoot down the premise in its entirety, just a large portion of it. Like, there are some funny ones. You know, there are some Star Trek parody ones that feature an AI that looks like Marilyn Monroe is a guest star on Star Trek, the original series. And so it's Marilyn Monroe in a Star Trek uniform from the 60s interacting with Spock. And they don't get Leonard Nimoy's face just right. But it's still, if it's suspension of disbelief, there's enough there that it could be amusing, but nothing that could be replacing actual acting.
Now, what's funny is, okay, so you and I, we're in tech, and we should be absolutely
embracing this,
enthusiastic over this, and going, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. And it's not, and it really truly scares me. I have pondered at times using 11 Labs to go through and add new bumpers, new updated voices for introing. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio, although it's, you know, I still like the life, the spark that Tosh Wood brought us when she did that recording.
I agree with you, Benjamin. I don't know that it scares me so much as I think I'm trying to articulate what it is I think, why I don't want to embrace this. And I think it's because I like doing radio. I like being on air. I like having a conversation with you.
Yeah.
Talking about technology. And I don't want something simulated.
No, and I think we're going to start to see a lot of shows start to embrace a lot more of that authenticity, that spontaneity that comes with real people thinking about what they're going to talk about, what they're
and
dealing
that's,
with,
that's
and
the other thing.
And the banter that goes back and forth. This is how natural people talk.
Exactly. And forgetting our show, which is awesome, and you should never forget our show, but you know, when we listen to other shows, I want to know that I'm getting the authenticity of the person I've already invested all these years into becoming a fan of.
Yeah.
The same way I would hope that people are fans of you and I doing this show. I don't want an artificial computer-generated voice just because they can simulate what I sound like and they've heard the things I've said in the past and make an extrapolation of what I might say or how I might sound saying it. Again, authenticity really is the key, Benjamin.
Yeah. Now, I do, I do have nuances in some of the things that I say. There are certain phrases you and I rib each other off air about some of the phrases. It's kind of like, or what's another one I do?
Oh,
it's all right.
Yours is almost Shatner-esque in your delivery.
I have a few different phrases which just sneak in there. Like, why do I keep saying that?
You've so mastered all of the intros to all the different segments. I know exactly what you're going to say. It's Computer Talk Radio 888 Nerd 888, and I will sit there and. See, people don't get the visual,
mock me
but I
too,
will
yeah.
mock Benjamin, and I will mouth the words. But he has to close his eyes and saying it because he knows I'm visually mocking him, and it's just for him.
Yes, yes. The audience of just one dude on the other end of the line. Oh, man. So, yeah, as much as we're nerds, I don't like the idea of where all of this deep fake voice is going. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I am not the AI of Keith M. Seedorf.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The website ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's one of the ways to reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back to you with answers to your computer questions, your technology concerns. Of course, you can also check out the podcast there as well. Marty Winston joins me now, and Marty, projectors. We've talked about projectors a few times over the course of the last year.
Indeed. And when's the last time you got yourself one?
I actually don't have any projectors in the house.
That's not unusual. In the least. Projectors at one point were the fun way to deal with the gang coming over to play games.
Sure.
They were the home theater for movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, they were an entertainment product as much as anything. Not that they weren't used in schools or business meetings or all of that, but they lost some ground to things like big screen monitors.
Yeah. Well, you got to figure that, television sizes now are rivaling what we set up for home theaters amongst the normal crowd. I mean, yes, there are people who they get a projector because they want the 120-inch screen, and 120-inch OLED screen is going to put you back a lot more than the projector will.
Yeah, it's third mortgage, I think.
Yes, yes.
And they're affordable, and that's a variable term, but they're reasonably priced projectors that can do 4K to 120, 150, 180 inches diagonal measure if you're looking for a big picture. Now, it's like only having one teaspoon of peanut butter and an infinitely large slice of bread. You can spread it as much as you want, but the wider you spread it, the thinner it gets. That's true of the light emission out of the projector. The bigger you make it, the dimmer it gets.
By
rule of thumb, a projector wants to be vivid, wants to have five times the lux, the actual reflected light level of ambient light.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're using it in the basement because your pals are coming over and the lights are dim, not a big deal. Almost anything's bright enough.
Yeah.
If you're using it in a corporate meeting room, you might want to get it a little brighter, and that's okay. You know, it makes sense. And projectors can get to a size that aren't practical for actual display screens projectors. But, well, they're still used for gaming. Well, they're still used for entertainment. Well, they're still used for business meetings and so on. Those categories are all fading a little bit.
Yes.
And part of that may be that the migration from HD to 4K slowed down a little bit at the more modestly priced level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have three major manufacturers and a bunch of secondary manufacturers around the world who build projectors, all these different brands. And there's one area that is a growth area for them.
Yeah.
And that's golf sims.
Okay, you're throwing me off here. Golf sims?
Yes. You set up an area with screens that looks like a golf course. Mm-hmm. You have a club, you have a ball, you have the ability to monitor the swing and project where the ball would go in real life. So you're simulating a game of golf indoors. Usually you're one of a row of these areas, kind of like handball courts, right?
Sure.
And golf sims have taken off as an entrepreneurial venture and extensions to existing sporting facilities or clubs. And that has been the opportunity market for the last year, year and a half for the projector industry.
Mm-hmm.
The projector industry early in 2025 was frightened by the imposed tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the manufacturing is in China. Some of it is in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
China pricing became punitive. Taiwan pricing, not so bad, but not lovely. You know, somebody's got to eat a difference, and higher prices will do that.
Right.
So they were worried about another slump. When that turned out to be postponed indefinitely, they got their courage back. Mid-year in June is a show that's in Orlando, the one city in the world that makes Las Vegas seem less tacky.
Okay, yeah.
That show is Infocom, where all the new stuff is. And I've got a guy there who's going to report to me in about a little bit now of what the new stuff is. But again, I already have connections inside the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Golf sims are it for now.
Okay.
Entertainment is still not fun. Part of the projector industry is looking at heads-up displays as a market, which are smaller, less bright projectors, and head-mounted stuff for virtual reality.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of that. There's been a big, huge push from a ton of different directions. And
And I think my message for our listeners is they're not done evolving.
Mm-hmm.
So if it seems to have lost your interest in the last year, year and a half, don't let it surprise you. Keep an eye on it. Projectors are going to re-earn a place and very likely introduce some applications that weren't there before.
Okay. All right. Interesting. And, I think it's an area which I've been deep in for over 20 years, over 25 years. Just from business and churches and all over the place. So, yeah. All right. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com. The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. Glenn reached out. My wife clicked a fake giveaway link. What should we do next? And I get this. You know, it's like grabbing a free sample and later finding out, yeah, your wallet's missing. You know, really basic, really simple, and it can freak you out. And I'm going to say, for the most part, you don't need to panic, but you should be doing a few different things. First up, I do want you to run a scan on your system. This is pretty much the biggest thing that we need to be worrying about. And you can do this with whatever malware software or anti-malware software that you have on your system, whether it's just simply the built-in one for Windows or whatever it is. You're just going to scan your entire system, check the entire drive, and it's going to go through and it'll give you responses. Some of them will freak out. They'll say you've got cookies from an untrusted source and things like that. And you can go through and follow their instructions as you see fit. But that isn't something that you should be panicking on or anything like that. I do want you to go through, and you're going to check down in the system tray if you're on Windows, and you're going to make sure that you look for any kind of apps or browser extensions in your browser or anything like that that might be sketchy. Now, a lot of this has been locked down over the years. The Mac was way ahead of the game on this. Windows is a little bit further behind. It is a lot harder to install software on your system without you knowing. But you do need to be aware of that, and you need to be very careful about that. So feel free to run all of those scans and checks. Next up, did she give out any passwords? If she did, immediately you need to go change those passwords, whatever it is. And if those passwords are reused or email, you know, attached to an email account or a username or anything like that, across the board, you need to change that password, especially if you're reusing it. This is a very big thing. This is something that really you need to pay attention to there, because that is one of the big goals of all of these scammers. All of these bad guys want to get a hold of your username and password and then try using that in a million, and I'm not exaggerating on that, a million different locations. Last up, I really want you to think about how to learn how to spot these too good to be true giveaway things. They abound out there. It's a matter of raising your awareness, being distrustful of anything that is coming in on an ad, whether we're talking about through email or another website or anything like that. And I want you to think more proactively about, who am I giving my information to? What am I clicking on? How am I interacting with everything that is out there on the big, bad, evil internet? This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Gigabyte, kilobyte, terabyte, megabyte, all this stuff makes my brain megahertz. And now, it's time for Computer Talk Radio with Benjamin Rockwell.
The website is ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. Of course, that's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says Contact Us Today. We're more than happy to help you with your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be, because we are radio's broadest look at computers and technology. The phone number, by the way, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Steve Keske joins me now, and Steve is legally blind. And to help people understand this, let me go ahead and describe it to you. Because there's all kinds of different varying levels of blindness. The key thing there is your vision has to be worse than 400 over 20 in your better eye with corrective lenses. And there are other things that go along with this. Steve, you've got, is it macular degeneration? I think that's what you said you had.
Yeah, that's it. So, both eyeballs.
Yeah, so you can see a little bit out of the
right eye,
the lower third or something like that. Okay, off to one side.
I got about 20% of my eyesight left.
Okay,
the rest of it's all gone.
Yeah, so we've managed to maneuver around CES a number of times, and you've seen a lot of different technology that really directly impacts not only you, but the millions of people in the United States have a level of distinct reduced vision. So I want to ask you, over the recent years, what are the things that have really excited you about technology that serves the visually impaired community?
Well, there's a lot of stuff, but
okay.
You know, really, audiobooks on CDs, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. They're on to MP3s now, aren't they?
Well, you can do that too. But, I mean, normally, if you get them on a CD, that's a little higher quality, I think.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, but you get the CDs, but you can also get books on CDs.
Mm-hmm.
You go into some streaming services, you can get books, you can get music, you know, a lot of different stuff.
Some magazines too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Although many magazines are going out of business these days.
Yeah. You know, us people who used to read magazines are getting a little on the old side.
Yeah.
I specifically encourage people that are no people or are people with limited visions or are considered legally blind as well mm-hmm. as really blind to get a hold of the National Library Service.
Mm-hmm.
That's a part of the Library of Congress.
Okay.
And they have a website called BARD, B-A-R-D.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this stuff, they'll send you a recorder,
mm-hmm.
or I should say a player, not a recorder, a player. And it uses a really good battery system because they can go up to 15 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But these are all free because Congress pays for it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I've been using them for years.
Yeah.
And when I do kick the bucket, all you got to do is send it back to them.
All right. There you go. Yeah.
It's there. But anyway, and you can get this through any of the web pages or websites that, you know, deal with the blind. Mm-hmm. You also got, there are sites where you can get Braille. That's the word I was looking for.
Okay.
You can get Braille and a lot of other stuff free of charge, of course. But these are the things that technology has made available to the masses and to worldwide, wherever the internet is, you can get access to this stuff.
Yeah. Now, I know there are screen readers out there. As a matter of fact, yeah. I think one of them is actually called Screen Reader.
Oh, yeah.
Which provides, like, the text, whatever text that's up on the screen. Have you ever dealt with any of those?
Oh, yeah. The most recent one is, shall we say, Microsoft Office 365?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So there are...
All those... Four components all have not only they can read what you've got on the screen as far as what's in those particular software packages, but you can also dictate into them.
So one of the things that I found very interesting as far as technology, this goes back to early DVD days. Well, maybe not so early. There was a movie called Daredevil. And
yeah.
That movie introduced me to something that I was not aware of, which is, I think it's referred to as assistive dialogue. And I just recently saw that, I think it was on Amazon Prime, where a lot of movies there. Have you experienced that?
Oh, yes.
And like, what movie have you seen? Movies or
I've watched the series Reacher for one.
Okay.
And
yeah.
The Accountant.
Okay, yeah.
And the whole idea was that I can't see the screen well enough unless it's really close to in front of my face. So by them reading what the characters and things are going on, I can now hear what's going on and don't have to rely on my limited eyeballs.
Yeah, I found it very interesting the first time I saw that.
Yeah.
It opens up and it's describing the New York City skyline. And even the credits, it was describing out what you were seeing on screen.
Yep.
And all of these different things. And in a way, many times I felt like they were ignoring certain things that might not be essential for a blind person to know, like listing off the colors or a
yeah.
flash of light. Maybe if the flash of light was important, but they would focus in on more of he's dressed in a dark leather suit, which is, you know, that's what the comic yeah. book character was. I can't remember. It's been a while since I've done that, but it was very fascinating to me to think about the choices that they made to include, but also not include in the description, making sure that the storyline was moving along, much like an audiobook would.
Well, yeah, that's true. And here you have this voice saying, and he hit him in the solar plexus. Oh,
yeah, there you go.
You know, so I know about that. You know where those are. You know, all these type of things that actually promote storyline.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
which is good because you can't see the storyline, so you rely on somebody else to tell you what it is.
Yeah,
and in court. In audiobooks, you know, your imaginations are what, you know, the words are interpreted by your brain, and your brain creates pictures all over the place.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And which is good. And all that whole part of technology going out to that segment of society and saying, here, we got these things for you
mm-hmm.
to use. And abuse, as I say, I use and abuse.
So it sounds like a lot of very empowering things are coming through technology to you.
Oh, yeah. And I think we're going to get even more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here, just take this podcast. It goes onto the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I can now go out to the internet, go to our webpage, and I can listen to our actual podcast.
Sure, yes.
Which makes a whole lot more sense.
I'll use this as a selfish plug for ComputerTalkRadio.com. Yeah. But yeah, a lot of podcasts, and that is definitely an enabling thing for all kinds of people these days. You don't have to necessarily tie into the radio at a specific time.
That's right.
Which is, at the same time, I actually enjoy a lot of that live radio concept, hearing what's going on there. It seems to lure me in a little bit better. But then again, I do like podcasts, so yeah.
I was listening to one podcast that really got me generated to re-listening to it time and time again, and that was Lost Sci-Fi Podcast.
Oh, interesting. I'll have to check that out. As for now, that's Steve Keske. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. Of course, you can reach out to me there, right at the website. We've got a page dedicated for that, where you can ask me your computer questions, your technology concerns, and I will get back to you with those. Also, you can check out the podcast there and all of the news postings that we do every week, all of the things we cover on the news segment. Dr. Doreen Galley joins me now, and Doreen, you went to something a couple of weeks ago, and it was called Put Data First, and help me understand, what is that all about?
So put data first.
I get it. Data.
It's about data. Yeah, data and AI. It was an inaugural event.
Okay.
Called at Planet Hollywood.
Yes.
I have not been to an event at Planet Hollywood before.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was interesting. You walk in, you have to go up like three floors, mm-hmm. and it's they have Chris with his he's one of the magicians and the Chippendales, and then there's your event.
Okay,
yeah. So that was fun. But there was hundreds of AI professionals mm-hmm. and data enthusiasts, but the AI professionals, I mean, one of the people there, for example, I know him and him specifically in deep learning for, mm-hmm. you know, he's been doing this for decades.
Okay.
You know,
all right.
This wasn't one of those where you go, I'm brand new in AI, I know nothing, and I'm going to learn about AI. This is where the people who are deep in AI went to go have the deep conversations.
Okay. All right.
No keynotes.
Okay.
No speakers. It was all round tables. 23 okay. round tables.
All right. All right. 23 round tables. Okay. That is cool. All right. And I like round tables. I like getting the folks together, even though we typically do, you know, here on the show, we do one-on-one kind of stuff where I ask questions. But when I see a lot of people, you know, telling these things, it's interesting to see the reactions. It's interesting to see the different points of view Not that I want to see them get into, you know, WWE fist fights or anything like that. But you know, it gets fun with that, though.
Yeah, everyone enjoyed the videos, actually done well, just of watching the roundtables. But you could tell everyone was really engrossed into their conversation.
Yeah.
So it was fantastic. But not only that, the vendors that were there all had demonstrations.
Okay, nice.
Right. So if you wanted to see the enterprise AI and how it works, they had a demonstration just so you would go, OK, and you know, what was my profitability? And they gave an example. It was, and then you see this extensive financial report and where they get the data and everything. You're going, understanding the power of something like Gemini or ChatGPT or Croc in an enterprise forum. But they're different in terms of the only thing they're allowed to consume and train on and interact with is strictly your enterprise data.
Okay.
Right. Likewise, there was a vendor that did application security. In this day and age with all these large language models, there's a lot of stuff going on with applications and the way they're interfacing with large language models to where the data is being at risk and they're interacting with agents.
Yeah.
And before you know it, the corporate data that they have an obligation to protect you from, and it depends on the organization. I mean, in theory, it could be HIPAA data, too. It could be your financial data.
Sure.
You know, things that are highly regulated data, but they're losing track of how it's escaping the enterprise, the data leakage going on through large language models. And so one of the vendors that provided a demo and had a product in that space, his video has been doing really well, too.
Very interesting. Yeah. So I know where I work, my day job. We utilize with AI. We've got an AI platform in-house that we use. It's a big name. But we've got an option for it to scour the web, or it can scour internally all of our documents and all of that. Interestingly enough, it's an either or. You can only do one or the other, which is fine. But I found it to be rather robust and a good job. I've enjoyed working with AI. So when we start talking about they basically were sticking with the AI data, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it was interesting when you mentioned that because there was a tool. May or may not have been a tool like that running when I was on my last sabbatical.
Yeah.
And one of my secrets to how I could infiltrate and understand the entire platform and get through the whole entire organization and get all the pieces together and find the people is I was using such a tool overall of Azure Global Engineering. And, you know, nice. I remember one time I needed to find a specific person that worked with a specific technology. And I put their first name in the technology. And lo and behold, it found me the PowerPoint of that person. And I
found nice. Them. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they're very handy, but you want to make sure you understand the controls because a lot of employees and enterprises don't watch out for their file access control privileges as much as they should when you have a tool like that crawling through them. Even in a small business, by the way, this is true. Some of these tools are very critical for any of you that have mom and pop companies or smaller businesses because you don't want your intellectual property leaving your business, right?
Yes.
Or your private information leaving your business. And so looking into some of these. But there was actually one of the other rock stars that was really neat. I had seen some of their earlier work in deep learning was Reliant AI, which was fact-based versus probability-based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you take out the probability, there's no room for hallucinations because they're 100% grounded in fact.
Okay.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Very cool. So one of the things you touched on, which I'm going to ask you what was kind of the scary thing, but I'm wondering if the scary thing was the idea, but you may already have known this, the idea that the AI can crawl through all of the data across the network. Was that the scariest thing that you saw there, or were there other scary things that you saw?
Was that the scariest thing that I saw? Well, I mean, I've known that it could always do that, right?
Yeah.
And I think more on the scary side, I was looking on the hopeful side to see that some of these technologies that people were starting to address them. Okay. There's actually also a white hat platform, basically, where they would go and attack, and you're like, okay, I'm worried about this risk from this large language model that we have in our environment.
Yeah.
And then it could go and simulate that attack in your environment and make sure that your environment has protected itself against that known risk coming from the large language model.
Sure.
And so I actually saw a pretty interesting collection, you know, for a smaller event, very small compared to most of the events I go to, right? Because it was measured in hundreds, not thousands or tens of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to see the security, advancements going on to protect you from being exploited and your organizations are being exploited by the large language models. Because when the organization is exploited, it's their customers, which is you and I, whose information is just getting out there. When they told us they were going to keep it private.
What is the most exciting thing for the general public that comes to mind for the future from Put Data First?
Most exciting thing. Got me on the stump for that one.
Curveball.
Well, I mean, I guess the most exciting thing, I mean, it was exciting just to see that there is advancements being made in people and the commercial level formally heavily thinking about protecting us from these large language models and protecting the information and understanding that, you know, the black box doesn't work when it comes to data involvement, particularly consumer data. Uh-huh. We need more transparency. But understanding the lack of transparency that fundamentally goes on is pretty scary.
Very cool. That is the voice of Dr. Doreen Galley. Do me a favor real quick. How can people check out some of your reports and stuff like that?
TBWAdvisors.com. That's T for technical, B for business, W for whispers, and YouTube at TBW Advisors.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Dr. Doreen Galley.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. I'm going to ask you to go on a journey with me in regards to your desk space, your workspace, where you are working on your computer. Now, this can apply to you at home, at your gaming computer, playing video games. This can apply to your workspace, whether it's at home or at the office or wherever. We need to be thinking about ergonomics. How strongly do I feel about this? One of the very first people, actually, that I had here on Computer Talk Radio, some 18 years ago almost, the person that I had on, I can't even remember their name, but we were discussing ergonomics. We were discussing the idea of carpal tunnel syndrome and a few other things and how we need to be taking actions to avoid all kinds of just medical maladies that could come along from computer work. look, I work at a computer day in, day out. I've been in the industry for a long time. We'll just leave it at that. And I have looked at a number of different things along the way that just really support the idea of being comfortable and being efficient at your work. And also for fun. So let's dive into a few different things along the way. First up, when we're at computers, yes, there are some people that have standing desks. Standing desks are a great idea for some people. If you are more active, great. There are distinct advantages for standing desks. There are disadvantages. There are some people out there, like right now, I do have a knee injury. There's no way that I'm going to be able to stand at a desk for much longer than about an hour without just extreme pain. So I have to think about that. So let's put that one off to the side, but it's still a viable thing, and there are some good ergonomics for that. One of the things that I have really felt strongly about over the years is a good chair to work in. Now, one of the things that I did with an employer, right about 20 years ago. I went to a company that basically I knew all of the chairs that they had around there. They were the cheapest of chairs. They were office chairs, and they bought them in bulk, and they got them at somewhere around $80 a piece or whatever. Pretty much, I mean, I guess right now these are $80 to $100 a piece. Maybe back then they were a little bit cheaper, but the chairs were not really designed for somebody to work at their desk for 8 hours a day. And I went to my new boss at the time, and I said, look, I will be sitting at my desk for 8 hours a day. I'm not going to be up and down out of the chair as much because, yes, I'm a computer nerd, and there are going to be times where I'm going to have to sit in that chair, not just for an 8 hour day, but for 10, 12, maybe even, emergency shifts where I'm going to be sitting in that chair for well over 24 hours. And that did happen a couple of times when I was there. And I said, look, you're going to give me a budget for a chair. Let me pick out a chair that's going to be ideal for me and is going to be ergonomic and is going to be comfortable, because these chairs aren't going to work. No offense. And he goes, you know what? You've got a very valid point. And he said, he put down a budget, and I got a chair designed, chosen for my personal needs. And I actually came in quite a bit under my budget, and he was great with that. He was happy with that. And this is something that we should all be thinking about. If you've got workers, if you are a worker, seek out good, well-built chairs that are going to last longer and be more comfortable. And that's a very key concern. We can start looking in other directions, too. We start looking at, like, computer mice. And you think, okay, how big of a deal is that? Well, a computer mouse is going to be utilized by you if you're utilizing any kind of computer. And it should be something that is going to be comfortable for you. And it doesn't necessarily have to be something that's really expensive. You just need to make sure that you're finding a computer mouse that fits your hand well, that you can move around and can be comfortable. The little $5 specials, $10 specials, whatever they are these days, they aren't going to they'll be technologically functional, but they're not going to be something that you're going to really be happy about using all day long. And you want something that is going to have the right balance, the right weight, the right feel for your hand. And you can do this. You can go to a number of, you can go down to your Staples, Office Max, Office Depot, whatever it is, and you can usually put your hands on a matter of 10, 15, 20 computer mice, and you can feel how they feel in your hand. You're going to find that there's going to be one there, and it doesn't have to be a $100 mouse or anything like that. You're going to find one, you go, oh, this feels really nice. I feel where the buttons are. I'm going to be comfortable. I'm going to be more efficient with this. You're going to start thinking about all of the different things there. And we can apply that same kind of concept over to computer keyboards. And I'm a computer keyboard snob. I have reviewed a number of keyboards over the course of my doing work here with Computer Talk Radio, but also at work itself. And I have found that the cheap keyboards will break down. You spend $15 on a keyboard, it is not going to last anywhere near as long as, yes, okay, so $100 keyboard or maybe even more, it's going to last longer, but it's also going to have a feel to it. And that's going to be a key concern for you if you want to type faster, you want to be more efficient. It should have the right angle for you. It should feel good when you're typing on it. And again, go on down to your local office supply store and say, hey, I want to try out a number of keyboards. And they usually have a number of them out. And you'll find that there's going to be one where you sit in there and you start typing. You go, oh, this feels great. I'm going to do a great job with this. So think about ergonomics all the way across your desk, everything you're dealing with. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and how a lot of that intertwines. And this year, we did see a lot in regards to tech workers who've been laid off. And this actually extends outside of that, and there are a lot of people who are pointing fingers at things like AI and saying artificial intelligence is going to take away all of our jobs. And I don't think that's going to be so much the case as we do need to adapt and all of that. But I don't want to speak to so much of that. I want to talk to the idea of the fact that if you are one of those that's experienced this or you feel like you're about to experience this, you're not alone. We'll start off by saying that morale is one of the more challenging things to keep up. Anytime you're diving into this job search, we are entering into a world when we get laid off or we need to start hunting for a new job that we are not experienced with. And it's a world that has changed. It is a world that has changed both in the post AI or present AI era, in the post-COVID world, and in the post-ATS, applicant tracking system world. And it's not really post. All of these things have changed the idea of how to search for a job. We go back in time a number of years ago, and I was being interviewed for a tech position. And in that interview, they had zero clue whatsoever in regards to computers. And some of the things that I was answering, some of the questions that were being presented to me, were absolutely clueless about what they had and if I would be a good fit. They still hired me because I knew a lot about computers. And that was it. Today, we've got so many different layers, so many different specialties and everything else that comes along with computing that it is very hard for somebody to come along and say, oh, you know about computers? Great. You've got a job. These days, you need to keep up your morale and you need to also learn to adapt. And a lot of different things I want to give you here, strategies, both that will keep you positive, but keep focused as well. First up, you do need to stay informed. You want to be keeping up with job market trends and industry news, especially if you are pigeonholed in a specific industry. You want to be tracking whatever is going on in the direction you want to go in. You have to stay ahead of the curve. Next up, I want you to be learning. You need to be taking education, whether it is just crash courses or studying or maybe even taking classes. You need to be building on your skills, your qualifications. You need to be expanding that brain, but also keeping it active, keeping it focused in a direction that's going to help you. I mean, don't go learning underwater basket weaving. That's not going to help you get a job unless you are one of the rare few people that are in that field. You want to focus on whatever industry that you're in and job-driven learning that is going to help you. Next up, you need to be networking. And LinkedIn isn't just all you can do. I'm talking about, I know that on a very regular basis, there are events, professional networking events, which I can go to, and I've gone to them randomly here and there, where I can take along a set of business cards and have conversations with professionals that are in my field, in information technology, and I can connect up with a lot of professionals throughout the IT field, and I can help gain insights as to where the market is going, as well as potentially leverage those communications for opportunities. Now, I do want you to have realistic expectations. You do need to understand that going out and doing a job search can be a very long and unpredictable process. We go back about 7 years ago. I actually was laid off from one company, and because of my specialty that I had developed, it was very hard for me to find jobs in that specialty. And I was looking around for other jobs, and they said, well, while you have experience in this, it seems like you're more focused on this, and if you get to that specialty, you'll be gone, which is unfortunate, but it was unpredictable. But it's something that was a cold, hard fact. It's like nobody wants to hire the CEO of a Fortune 500 company to be a greeter at Walmart. That's a dramatic difference between jobs. But it gives you the idea there that they are always going to be concerned. And you need to also kind of think through how you can set them at ease. The last thing I'm going to push here is you need to practice self-care. You need to take care of your physical health. You need to take care of your mental health. You need to be going on out and, yes, setting aside some time to get exercise. You need to be thinking about how you're eating and eat healthy. And yes, most importantly, you need to make sure that you are getting adequate sleep. And when I say adequate sleep, this is not a matter of, oh yeah, I've always slept 4 hours a night or 6 hours. No, you need to be upping that on up. Yeah, find something like a sleep app or something that is monitoring how you're sleeping and giving you a score, and work to get that score up as high as you can. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost? It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, site ground. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Steve's question, why do some secure websites still show warnings in my browser even though I visited them before? And I get this. This is like approaching a locked gate that works fine one day and it balks the next day. Go, nope, we're not going to let you in. And there's a number of these different things that exist out on the internet that make sure that we're going to be safe. They're making sure that that we're really going where we intend to go. And there's a lot of potential for things to break down along the way. First up, we have something called Secure Socket Layer. And this is basically making sure that the information is the information that you're getting is going to be secure. The information that you're sending is going to be secure. We see this heavily in use in just about any different company that has financial transactions going on. So whether we're dealing with your bank or someplace you're buying a home, you're getting a loan, and they're making sure that nobody else can come along and, you know, hack this and grab your social security number, your bank account, and whatever it is. And this is a key thing. Now, Secure Socket Layer requires a certificate. Now, that certificate may have expired on that website. That means that your information isn't going to be secure. That's a lot of what that warning is saying there. But that isn't the only thing that is going to break that entire concept. You may have a matter of the date or the time is wrong on your computer. And occasionally, it's the issue, the same thing, the same issue on the other end. You may also have an issue where you've got an older browser and it may not be working with the latest security settings that are out there. And that can really create just part of this nightmare. Then we get into a few other weird things like the certificate that you have on your system. At some point, you installed a certificate to allow you to connect up to that website. This is more in the business realm and some heavier certificate things. And you download, you set up a certificate on your system, and your local certificate may be outdated. And you may have updated your browser, your operating system, and that may actually break that as well. We've also seen issues where some websites have mixed content, and some of the content is secure and some of it's insecure, and that will trigger a browser warning. I've seen that in the past. We also have caching issues where you have some old certificate data, and it may be persisting there. It's sitting on your computer, and it's going to clash with whatever new certificate that is on the other end. Additionally, there are times when the site's host configuration somehow changed and they moved servers or something like that, and they forgot to clean up and they forgot to test and they forgot to make sure that they had the proper secure setup that they should have had all the way along. There's so many different areas where this can break down. And in this case, for Steve, I would say make sure you've got the latest browser and make sure that you've got the latest patching on your system. That is a big first step there. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.